Today it's a very specific topic on looking at one questionnaire. It's really an example of what you might do with a lot of questionnaires, but this particular questionnaire just happened to come my way through another student, actually, who's just coming through, John Dinkler, or came through recently. So being on his dissertation committee, I was exposed to his analysis of this questionnaire. But we actually had this questionnaire in another study before. It just kind of accepted it as is at that time. But in this case, started to look a little bit more at the questionnaire and some options for scoring it. And so that's what I want to talk about today. And feel free to ask questions as I go along. So
I didn't realize he was a doctoral student.
Yeah.
I heard his name.
Yeah.
I saw it.
So he was working
abstract
on that data set that of course,
right,
you're going to hear me talk about that, of course, you're more familiar with than me. So before getting into the details of that questionnaire, just to give you a little idea of something that's been around for a while, Bob Kaplan, who used to be the chair of health services at UCLA, has been a co-author on an edited book. Two authors, him and one other person, but there's been multiple editions of this book. And in one of the chapters, you see a graph that looks like this in terms of many things you can do in analyzing questionnaires or tests. In this case, it's an example of a test. So you could be any kind of test you might be given to someone where there's a correct or incorrect answer. So it's scored, you know, zero incorrect, one correct. And one of the ways you can evaluate the items in a test is also applicable to evaluating scales that we look at a lot of times in health services research. So I'm going to, you know, in this case we're talking about a scale, but you can start off and think about a dichotomous question or item in a test. And you can graph in the x-axis the total test score someone might have. So I don't remember whether they said how many questions or how many items there were in this test, but you get a total test score. In this case, it's graphed from 51 is the lowest, 100 is the highest value. So the higher is better in terms of how you're doing on this test on the x-axis. And you can use that test score as a basis for evaluating each of the items that are in that test. So even though, you know, the items are part of the test, you can then take that test score and use it to evaluate how well the item is doing in one way. So what we're looking at on the y-axis is the single item, whatever that item might be, and how many people get it correct. So, you know, if you have a test, some questions are going to be easy, a lot of people will get them right, and some will be harder, and only a few people will get them right. So this is graphing the proportion of people who get the question correct by their total test score. And what you would expect is the higher your test score, the better you did on the test, the more likely you're going to get any particular item correct. But if beyond that, if it's a good test question, you should see that you have an increased probability of scoring high on the test question as your test score goes up. If that doesn't happen, if you get a flat line or if the line actually goes in the other direction, then you have to wonder about that item, because what is that item really assessing if it's not related to performance on the test? So they show this one example and they call it an item characteristic curve. And they say that this particular item discriminates well at low levels of performance. And what they mean by that is, you see down here, these are worse scores at the lower end, but there is a discrimination. As people get better on the test, the likelihood is going up pretty sharply of your getting the test question correct. So that, you like to see a good upward slope. I mean, the best kind of item would be one that has, you know, just a sort of a vertical, or
diagonal
line. So this is kind of looking like that here at the beginning. But then they say at higher levels, it doesn't discriminate well, because you can see it starts to flatten out. Now, at least it doesn't go, like, down. If it went down, that would mean, well, people with the highest test score have a lowest probability of getting it right. So this is a decent item characteristic curve. You know, you're not expecting items to discriminate throughout the continuum, so this is not unusual. It's doing a good job at the lower end of the test, and then it kind of flattens out. Well, you've got a lot of test items, hopefully, so that, you know, you might have some others that maybe are flatter at the beginning, and then you have a slope at the higher ends. But the main thing is that this is one way to evaluate a test item. So seeing something like this would suggest, yeah, this item is working pretty well, and the collection of items you have, hopefully, collectively, will be something like this. At least at some point, you'll have the slope going up, suggesting that those who are doing better at some point on the continuum are going to be more likely to score high on the question or get it correct. Is that clear? Okay, so I've done this kind of thing with tests that I've given out in class, and you'll find some items are really bad. You know, that they're not related at all to the total test score, so that probably shouldn't be used in scoring the test. You know, if that tells you, you know, maybe it's a test item that people who are not really very good at the thing you're measuring, for some reason, score high on it, maybe by guessing or some other reason, and therefore it's not telling you about their ability on whatever it is you're measuring. So this is one of the reasons to show you this. Is this says 1989, second edition. This has been around for a long time, especially in evaluating tests. For some reason, it hasn't been used very much in evaluating multiple category scales, like the kind that we use a lot. And the example that I've passed around is one of those sort of multi-category scales. So if you're looking at multiple categories or multiple possible responses, then you generalize what I just showed. So that was a dichotomous item, but you could use the same idea with a single question that has multiple response options. So here is the most widely used item to assess self-rated health, and it has five response categories. So it's the item stem is, in general, how would you rate your health? You can say excellent, very good, good, fair, poor. Well, this is real data from an article we published in JGEM in 2015, where instead of a test score here, we had a physical health scale score, and it was estimated using IRT, but we could have used simple summated scoring, you know, just adding up the responses that people gave to the different questions that were in the scale. Now, this is only a four-item scale, so it's a short scale, but that's what we had as a basis for this analysis. And What this is showing is actually a good question, a good item when you have multiple categories. So what's different here, when we were looking at a single item, you know, we want to have this increasing slope as we go across the continuum. It doesn't have to go across the entire continuum, but we certainly want some positive slope. When we're looking at multiple categories, what we'd like to see is something that looks like this. We'd like to see that the highest physical health score in this case is going to be associated with the highest probability of giving the most positive response, which is excellent. Because excellent represents better health. This is plotted so that better health is further to the right. So people who are the most healthy should have the highest probability of saying, in general, their health is excellent. And then the next category down, very good, should, somewhere on the continuum, it should be the most likely to be selected. And then the next category down, and the next category down, and they should be monotonically ordered like this. So when you're evaluating scale items, this is what you're looking for, a pattern that says every one of the response options at some place on the continuum is going to be most likely to be selected, and it's going to correspond to the way the response categories should be ordered. You know, when you administered this question, this was assumed to be the most negative response, and this is the best response, and these are the intermediate responses. If good was here and fair was there, that would be a problem, even though we have somewhere on the continuum, every response choice is most likely to be selected. Yes?
Have you looked at this based on our habit of combining fair and poor together versus the rest?
Curious. You know, I haven't done it, but what this is suggesting is that would be throwing away some information. So if we had fair and poor look the same, the shape looked the same, then that would suggest maybe it can collapse without losing information. But this suggests, yes, fair is telling you that, you know, they're doing better in terms of their physical health than people say, at least, you know, overall. So, you know, I'm going to do something like that in this example, where you're going to see sort of the effect of collapse and what it does, at least to this response curve. So is it clear to everybody what we're doing? So even though this is really simple, it's not been done very commonly in health services research or, you know, even in, you know, social sciences until recently. So here again, I said I used IRT estimated score. You could use just the sum score. You know, you don't have to be using the most sophisticated analyses, but even though you could use the total score, it just isn't, just hasn't been done for whatever reason. And part of the reason I think now it's more widely being done is because people are using IRT more and more. You know, like SAS has a PROC IRT, and STATA has a procedure, and so it's becoming more commonplace. And those programs will produce these curves for you, whereas a lot of the software like SAS, when you're doing total scores, you would kind of have to do your own programming. It just doesn't get spit out of the, you know, canned packages. So that's probably part of the reason. So let me do it. So this is what I passed out to everybody, was not literally this. And the reason I didn't literally pass this out is because if you look at the stem, I changed it so it says how much your health affected your life. I didn't want to have how much your heart failure or heart condition affected your life. So I just changed this attribution because I don't know how many people have heart failure in here, but I assume it's not a lot. So if I had worded it this way and passed it out and said you to, you know, try to go ahead in your mind and pretend like you're a respondent, you'd probably stop right away. Right? You'd say, this doesn't make sense. But that's one of the issues in health-related quality of life measures, is sometimes you'll have a measure like this that's targeted at a particular condition. Well, the only people that can complete it are the people with the condition. And, you know, that may be a good thing to do, because you want them to attribute the effect of heart failure on various activities of their life. In other cases, you may not want it to be just heart failure, you may want it to be health. So I kind of generalized it so that it would be applicable to everyone, but everything else is the same. So you can see, you know, you had, well, this isn't the same either, I had to change this to health, but, you know, you have this little attribution, and then you say, did it prevent you from living as you wanted during the past month in a lot of different areas? And you see there are 21 different questions there. I'm only showing you part of these here, but this is the Minnesota Living with Heart Failure Questionnaire. So you essentially have it in front of you, except I've changed it, made it more generic. Does anyone see anything about this that's a little bit interesting? I know you've seen response scales before, but is there anything about this response scale at all that jumps out that's unusual or something maybe you wonder about? I'm sorry, I apologize for reading that. So
even before the response scale, it assumes that each person can differentiate that their heart failure is what's causing all these issues versus any other health conditions they may have.
Right. Yeah, that's not the topic today, but that's a good general point. That's what I was kind of saying, is they can be good if people can make the attribution, but sometimes people will have trouble. If it's a dominant condition like heart failure, it's probably less of a problem. But if you have a lot of comorbidities, even with heart failure, you'd say, well, I'm not sure if it's due to heart failure or if it's due to my diabetes or, you know, something else. So that's sort of the downside of these diseases.
Right.
This is actually considered disease specific.
Right.
There are a lot of measures that are disease targeted that don't go that far and say attributed to something that specific. But that's a good observation. I want you to focus more on this right here. Does this look like a typical response scale, people?
So the no looks different to me. So usually it's like very little to very much, but no.
Or not at all.
Or not at all.
So zero would be not at all, not applicable.
Yeah, it's interesting. Another thing related to that, since you said that, it says if a question does not apply to you, circle the zero after that question. So I'm not sure that's a great idea. It might be, but you always wonder about how people are going to interpret not applicables, and then you're right. Giving that kind of the most positive response. So that could introduce some problems in terms of the score.
Did your health heart failure prevent you from living? And then no. So it didn't prevent, so do you have a problem or you don't know? You know then.
Well, yeah, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be not a problem, but
right.
But it's complicated.
It's right. Super complicated.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a double negative.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. This is not an easy layout for people. So that's not what I'm focused on today. There's a lot of problems. Focus it right here. This is a little odd.
That you have
three are labeled.
It's backwards.
Right?
Well, you can reverse it. I mean, I don't know that would.
Okay.
Maybe you could. You might say it's easier, but look at this. I don't know that often that it's just not symmetric in any way, right? Sometimes you'll see the endpoints are labeled, and then you have like a 0 to 10 scale, only labeled the endpoints, but everything else is kind of open. Here it's like 2 are labeled, and this is labeled, but these are not. So you just kind of wonder what
does everybody guess the same at what those.
Yeah, what are they thinking? You know, is it like. Well, 2 is kind of close to very low. 4 is kind of close to that. That's somewhat in between. It's ambiguous to me what people think. So this is not something you typically would see, that this kind of gap like this.
Very little, in between, much, very much.
Right.
How much is
and that would be more,
much versus
but that would be more typical. Someone
right.
Put some labels there
true.
For every
right.
point.
Or it's used only with 12 things that have been planned.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what
and
I was saying. The endpoints labeled, and even then, you still wonder, what are people saying? Like 0
right.
to 10, where, well, I say 5, you say 6, is that really different?
Also, right. No is just not the same as does not apply.
Right. Well, that's
just not.
Well, that's what I think this was not a good idea. It would be
right.
better.
No.
If you're going to do it, it's not even a good idea anyway. Because
right. And not
that does not apply.
Right.
Yeah, but that's not even good because, again, you don't know what they mean necessarily, but it does not apply. Like, there's one, well, it's not here, but one of those is on sex, right?
Right.
Sexual something or other. Well, does that mean that I don't have it or what? You know, and
well,
is that good or bad?
Well, more thing because some people are no longer employed.
Well, yeah, that's what they're trying to cover, but still. If you really wanted to do that right, you'd have to ask more questions and find out, you know, should I code this as missing? Should I say it's the most positive response? They're just assuming it's most positive. So, again, there are all kinds of issues, but this is what I'm focusing on.
Great.
So, let's see if I can do this. So, the way it's usually scored is you've got these 21 questions, and it's, you know, simple summated score, which a lot of measures are. You know, again, there's more and more attention to more differential weighting of the responses and, you know, more sophisticated approaches. But most typically, people are going to say, okay, there's 0 to 5 is the possible. If you look at this, here's your responses. We're going to treat these as equal intervals. So if you get a 0, in this case, a higher score is worse. So this is the best response. This is the worst response, and you just treat these as equal intervals. So whatever responses they give, you just add them up, essentially. And the higher the score, the worse. But you're treating everything as if it's an equal interval. Like this distance is equal to that, and that distance is equal. All these distances are equal. We'll just treat them as, you know, equal interval scale. So if you get a total score, another thing you might say is there's a lot of things here kind of mixed together. So you have 21 items, you get a total score, but the possible range is 0 to 105 because each item is scored 0 to 5. So if you had 0 on everything, you would have 0. That would be the best response. If you had 105, that's the worst response. And there's all kinds of things that are getting combined together into the total score. Then you have, you know, there are all kinds of variants that have come out, but the sort of standard manual will say, okay, you have 8 items that are tapping physical health. And here's the actual item numbers in case you ever want to look that up or look on your thing and see what it is. I'm going to refer to it a little bit. And for that 8-item subscale, the range is 0 to 40 because it's 0 to 5 for each item again. So 40 would be worse, 0 is best. And then you have a 5-item emotional health scale, and there's the range for that. So The way it gets used is people will often do a total score and then the two subscales. Sometimes they'll come up with a social scale too, but that's probably the most tenuous of anything. This is sort of the standard, most often done. And again, you'll have people doing variants on how they actually score those things, but this is the most typical. So the data that I'm using actually comes from this study, and two of the authors, Michael and Jean, are in the audience. So this is describing the study, in case you want to know about the details. But basically, remote monitoring and telephone nurse coaching intervention to reduce readmissions for heart failure patients. And I had baseline data that Michael provided and got permission from the group just to look at. About 1,400 observations, and here's the demographics, you know, about half male, female, majority white, but a fair number of black and Hispanics, and 60 to more than 80, you know, with a pretty good split among these three categories. So that's what I'm working with, and with that data set, I'm then going to look at this response scale and see if it looks reasonable, what's being done typically in terms of, you know, just sort of adding up the responses.
And if this is an old survey that's been used in many, many, many studies. Sure, right.
Yeah.
So the first, do you remember?
Yeah, somewhere around late 80s. There are like two main measures for heart failure. There's this one, and there's a Kansas City measure, and those are.
And once they get used, you have to keep using.
Yeah,
because that's what's all the.
Exactly.
That's the standard. That's the standard.
And I included this one in the paper we wrote on readability, right?
You did.
I don't remember which way.
Did you do the national measurement study? Is that right? That was like 2009 then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the reason you did that is because this was included in the national health measurement study.
Right.
Because we had heart patients included in it. We had to pick one, and it was either this or Kansas City.
It wasn't the cancer, and I think we used two that were disease.
There was a cataract one. And,
yes.
Yeah, so eye disease. But I argued for this one, actually, because I think the Kansas City one is worse. But I know I had a fight with the PI at the time. He said, everybody in Wisconsin says you should use Kansas City. But usually the choice is whoever you know says use it. But, you know, those are those two leading candidates. So this is a reasonable measure in terms of use. So the first thing I did when I got the data is I didn't just say, I'm going to take the physical health scale as is and take the emotional scale as is, but I actually probably need to redo everything that way. I tweaked it a little. It's not going to make any difference, but I thought, I'm going to start with what is supported by the data. So I did exploratory factor analysis, and then based on that, I said, it looks to me like there are 10 questions that are physical health. There might be four that are social health, but I'm just going to ignore it because it's kind of weird. Conceptually, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it kind of fits with this idea. Some people think there's social health factor, but it's not really very stable. So I'm just going to, it looks like there are four items that kind of went together. They're kind of social, but not enough there to really do anything with for this purpose. And then there are five emotional items that are very similar, but not identical to what's standard. So I deviated from the standard. And what I did is I had item scale correlations just to show you that what I put into these groups, these scales here, at least had item scale correlations corrected for overlap that made sense. Now, where I deviated, there's a question about swelling. You know, if you look there, you can see it. That is not typically in the physical scale. But see, I looked at its correlations, 0.56, 0.34, 0.44. This is correlation of the item with the physical scale, with the social scale and the emotional scale that I ended up with here. And it seemed to go more with physical. Now, this is one that you might say, given it wasn't in the standard one, you probably should just leave it out. And it's not going to make any difference in the end, but I went ahead and kept it. And then another item has had something to do with recreation, and whether you're interfering with your recreational activities. And it had a pretty substantial correlation with the scale, so I went ahead and included that. So I added two items. Two items were included on physical health beyond the standard, but, you know, again, it's not going to matter for the conclusions. I just want you to note that. And then in emotional, I added side effects because its correlation was higher with this emotional scale with other things, but you might say, well, you know, that's not really emotional too much. It could be a mix of things. So I could have taken that out. And the other thing I did is concentration was normally in there, but I didn't include it because it was correlated equally with the three scales. So I'm just letting you know that what you see is not exactly what's standardly used, and some people will deviate. I deviated here, but I just wanted to have the most defensible empirical scales right now. It may not be perfect. And like I said, I would rerun things with the standard scales, and I know it's not going to change anything at all because it's so similar. But the heart of what I'm trying to do here is to estimate these item characteristic curves. So it started, and this is in SAS, so I used IRT. Again, I could have used the observed scores if I wanted to, but it would have been harder for me because it's not in the CAM program. So using PROC IRT, a graded response model, which is one type of IRT model, we estimate emotional health scale from the five items that I've included. And then for each of the five items, we look to see, are those six response choices working the way they should if it's a good scale? Well, this is the pattern you see, and you see this consistently on the whole scale, is you get no being where you want it to be. You know, the people who are low, So high score here is worse. So people who are doing better in terms of emotional health, they're most likely to say no. So the better people are to the left on this x-axis here consistently. And you'd like that. That's confirming what you'd expect from the response scale. The very little, you know, which is, you can see is the second labeled category, you're getting a little bit of evidence that it's most likely to be selected on these items, but it's not very much of the continuum. It's a very narrow range of the continuum, but at least somewhere it's most likely to be selected. So that's somewhat support, and then very much is up here. That's good, just like the no is. So at the extremes, you're getting what you want. But what you're seeing here is that for all the other response choices, the ones that aren't labeled, they're just flat, and they're, you know, basically flat. There are some humps here and there, but they're never the most likely selected response choices. So it's only the labeled categories, the three labeled categories, that are going to fit the idea of what we'd like in terms of item characteristic curve. And so I then, well, let's assume, right now I'm just focused on emotional health. I'll go to physical health, and you'll see it's the same idea. But given what we saw here, I said, okay, this is kind of like your question. What should I do now? I have 0 to 5, which is six response categories. Now, it looks like you really don't have six distinct response categories in terms of the way they're performing. So I'm going to collapse. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep 0, and I'm going to collapse all these categories into 1. So 1 to 4 all become one middle category, and then I save that. And that was just kind of eyeballing the data and saying, well, I'm not sure exactly where these fall in the continuum, but I'll just try. It looks like maybe they're sort of on the low end, which is the better, more positive response in terms of emotional health. So that once I do that, then we can look at the response curves. Now when you see them, you know, you have three categories, you don't have six. And this is what you want to see. Just like with the excellent rapport item, all three response categories have somewhere on the continuum where they're most likely to be selected, and they're where they should be. This is most positive, this is sort of in the middle, and this is, you know, the least positive response. And consistently, you're getting the nice shapes that you want to see. So it supports, well, you don't really have six categories of information, maybe you have three. And I'm not saying that three is perfect, but at least three looks a lot better than six did. So that's sort of an initial look at this. Now, if you look at physical health, I haven't labeled these fully because one thing, PROC IRT doesn't give you the labels, so I have to kind of put it in myself, and I'm just saying, well, there's very little again. It's kind of just like it was with emotional health. Now we're looking at physical health items. It's most likely to be selected generally at some point, but it's very narrow. So again, the extremes are picked the way you'd like. You know, the most positive health response is no. That's likely when you're really doing good in terms of physical health, because a high score is worse. And the most negative response is most likely to be picked by people that are scoring really high on the scale. that all these other response categories are just not doing what you think they should. They're never the most likely to be selective. And here's the other items. Again, you get, it looks like at most you're going to get three categories of information. In this particular item, you're not getting anything at all. So that was then the step that leads me. Again, I collapsed the same way. So I collapsed most of those middle categories together. I just have, you know, the extreme categories, and I have everything else. And this looks good. So it looks like, okay, maybe it's not six. It might be, it's somewhat less, and three seems to be somewhat reasonable, at least in terms of this. So using that, oh, and here's the rest of those scales that I was calling physical health scales. Okay, so then I would say, okay, well, is this going to matter now? Now we know that, you know, like you might suspect, there's not really six distinct categories working the way they should. And if you do all kinds of other analyses, by the way, on these kind of surveys like this, it looks good. It's internally consistent, reliable, you know, other type of things you might look at. It doesn't really show you what's going on in these category response curves. So you can easily think it's working fine, but if you don't look to see specifically the response categories, you don't necessarily know that that's what's going on here. But I really don't know the best way to collapse them. So I know 0 to 6 is probably not reasonable, at least in terms of the way the categories are performing, in terms of relationship to the underlying concept. So I'm going to try a variety of things. And the first thing is what I just did, the most extreme collapsing down to three categories. I know I don't want to dichotomize it. I know there's at least three pieces of information in those response categories. So I try that. So this is just saying, you know, I kept 0, I kept 5 the way it is, and I collapsed everything else, and now I'm just going to 0, 1, 2, you know, but 5 has to be recoded to 2 because I don't want to unduly weight it. I want to still treat these as equal interval. Version 2 now, I said, well, maybe you don't have to collapse that much. Maybe you could collapse down to 4 categories, and therefore, you know, I collapse 1 and 2 together, and if you look at the scale again, 1 is very little, and 2 is not labeled. And I'm saying, well, maybe because it's close to it, it'll act like very little, even though it's not labeled. So I'll collapse those 2. I'll keep 3 as is, and then I'll collapse the extremes together. So, you know, again, 4 wasn't labeled, 5 was, and I'll sort of treat them together. So now I'll have 0, 1, 2, 3. And then I can preserve even more, one more category, by just collapsing that end. Now I could also just collapse the other end if I wanted to go on forever, but I'm just sort of getting a rough idea. Doesn't matter how many categories I actually preserve when I'm scoring this thing. So that's why I've done this. And then, of course, I have the original 0 to 5, which is 6 categories. So I've got 4 different variants on how I might score these things. So the next thing is to look at, well, so we've scored these in 4 different ways. Now let's look at how, when we score them in 4 different ways, does it change a relationship with other variables that you might consider validity variables of construct validity? So if this thing is measuring the effect of heart failure on people's quality of life, then we can hypothesize that people who score higher on the New York Heart Association classification, which indicates more limitations in physical activities, that they should get a higher score on the health-related quality of life measure, because a high score is bad in terms of impact on life, because that should go together, right? This is just telling us about something in particular, physical activity. And what we're going to look at is the physical health scale and the emotional health scale. So at least in terms of physical health scale, we expect these to kind of go together. And the most valid way of scoring the Minnesota measure would be the one that's most strongly associated with this classification system. So when I look at that, the way I'm doing it is, oh, and it turns out there are very few people in level 1, and that's just because of the study. You had people with heart failure, so I think it was 5
because
people.
It was shortly after they were admitted to the hospital.
Right, and baseline.
An acute exacerbation.
Right. So they were sick at baseline. It wasn't like a general sample of all people with heart failure. There's specific reason that they should be sicker. So I looked at it, but then I decided I'm just going to exclude those people from this analysis. So I'm only looking at level 2, level 3, and level 4. And again, 4 is worse in terms of limitations in physical activity. And these are the, what I've done here is not the standard way of scoring. I just put everything on a 0 to 100 possible range where 100 is worse. So it's the same direction, but I didn't want to have to remember what the range was, so I just said everything 0 to 100. And these are reasonable in terms of the means you're getting. You know, that the highest mean on the Minnesota measure of physical health that I am using here is for the group that's worse off in terms of the New York Heart Association classification. And there's the monotonic association, and the, you know, the next worst is this, and then this is the best of the three. Those who have the best level on the New York Heart Association classification have the lowest score, which is the best score in the way this thing is scored. And that's consistent across any of these ways of scoring. So this is the three category, here's the six category. So it's, if you eyeball the means, you really can't tell. So one of the ways to look and see, you know, which of these is most strongly associated with this, these three levels, is an F statistic, just from one-way ANOVA. So sometimes that's called relative validity. And so if you look at the F statistics, well, this one stands out as being the lowest. It's still substantial for an F statistic, but all of these look pretty similar. So it turns out, at least for this one variable, that you wouldn't want to just use three categories. If you'd be losing some information. You want to use four or more. But it doesn't seem to matter if you use more than that. And you can even, the original six categories are doing okay here, even though we know there's a problem with them. In this case, you're not getting much difference. It's just saying three categories is too few, then you lose some information by collapsing that much. So that was one variable. Then for the other ones, I'm going to look at, and there's a lot more variables in the data set, so one of the things I'm hoping is that VISIT will look at the actual study and the outcomes to see, you know, change over time doesn't matter, because that's really the essence of this, is if you're doing an intervention and you want to see if there's an effect, well, if you score it differently, is that going to change your conclusion? So that would be kind of the gold standard way, but right now it's just cross-sectional. What's the association with self-rated health? Now, I already said from the beginning we had this other paper where we used this, and of course it's used here as well, so we can say, how does the Minnesota physical and emotional health scales relate to self-rated health? How do they relate to hospital admission? How do they relate to obesity? You know, just BMI 30 or greater would be one, and everyone else is zero. You could do more refined categories of that, but I just dichotomized it. And then the geriatric depression scale. So you'll see I kind of selectively use these depending on whether I'm looking at physical or emotional health, because they apply more to one or the other in some cases. So before I do that, when I look at the correlations of these measures to try to see if one scoring is more strongly related, does anyone have any idea what a magnitude of correlation is? When you look at the magnitude of correlation, if you see 0.5, 0.3, 0.1, you know what is large, small, medium? Have any ideas at all? Keith is raising his hand. He's willing to guess.
Yeah, it would be a guess.
It's as good as anything, really, because there's so little
magnitude of correlation.
So if you see a correlation of 0.2, do you consider that to be large? Or?
My guess is going to be like 0.7 to be large.
Okay.
That's exactly what I would have guessed.
Yeah, that's probably pretty typical. Now, of course, that's
I don't know any better.
No, it's reasonable. It depends on context. So if you were measuring the same thing or something very similar, then 0.7 you might expect it. You know, like if, even in the test retest, if you got 0.7, it's the exact same thing. It's just over time. But it really depends on the context. So you can't say absolutely. But I think in this context, where the things we're measuring are kind of related, but they're not identical, you might say this is reasonable. And I'm going to say 0.1, and I'm going to tell you why. This is actually coming out of Cohen's rules of thumb. So they don't always apply. There are situations where 0.7 and others would be more reasonable. But if you take the standard Cohen rule of thumb for effect size, what's a big, you know, what's a small, medium, and large effect size?
Mm-hmm.
0.2 standard deviation is small, 0.5 is medium, and 0.8 is large. And those are probably the most widely used rules of thumb. I mean, to me, they make a lot of sense in a lot of contexts where you're looking at, like, the effect of an intervention. If it's 0.5 of a standard deviation, you know, you're really happy. If it's 0.2, you might still be happy because, you know, but if it's below that, then you may have trouble. So if you translate those directly into correlations, this is the same thing as 0.2 standard deviations. And this would be the same, you know, as the 0.5 standard deviation, and then 0.371 is going to be the same as 0.8 standard deviation. So it looks small to people when they look at this, but if you realize at least that it's a translation of the standard effect size people are using all the time, in some cases it could be reasonable. I think it is reasonable here, so I'm going to just use that just for the heck of it. Not that it matters that much what we're doing. But here when we look at physical health, I said, well, the reasonable physical health variables are these three, are the ones that I picked, not the geriatric depression scale. I mean, you could look at it, but that's mental health, so I'm going to exclude it. So I look at self-rated health because that, you know, could be physical, could be mental, kind of everything together. And here's, again, the four different options for scoring. Here's the correlations with self-rated health. Range from 0.28 to 0.30, and that's in the medium range. I'm giving a reminder here of what I just said. Hospital admissions, those are only one was significant in the past 30 days, and that's the 5-category scoring. Obesity, small associations, and they're all pretty similar. The largest one was actually the 3 categories. So one of the things you're seeing now is, if you look at these numbers, they're not that different. Depending on what you do, even though we know there's problems with the way those categories are performing, it doesn't seem like it's making a heck of a lot of difference, at least in terms of these validity correlations. You know, there might be others in the future where it does make a difference. But now when we look at emotional health, again, self-rated health makes sense. This geriatric depression scale in it. And I'm saying maybe obesity, too, because that could, you know, affect people's mental health as well as their physical health. So self-rated health, again, is the medium range here. The largest correlation is this one with 5 categories, but these are pretty similar. They're not that much different. This is the lowest one. Same thing here. This is the largest correlation, 0.38 with that. These are in the median, the large range. This would just make it to what we would say is large correlation. And then obesity is trivial, and they're all pretty similar. So the bottom line, at least in terms of these variables, seems to be that it doesn't matter. So, and this is not atypical at all. So, you know, there's this history in the literature about how you weight things together, and, you know, improper linear models work pretty well. But I think these things are so highly correlated that when you tweak, you know, response categories together and score them differently, it's probably unlikely to make a difference. Now, you know, it's, again, better data evaluation in the future, maybe it would make a difference. You know, something would be close to significant, and maybe it would become significant, but these data here do not show that it really is going to matter if you score this in a standard way, which is nice for people who are doing that way. It's still useful to know that the response categories are not performing optimally, and maybe if you were able to do this questionnaire, you could actually do a better job, you know, by not having those categories unlabeled. Now, one of the things I should say about the... No, I don't have it here. If I go back, I just wanted to say one thing. If you look at the frequencies going way back... Oh, here we go. Sorry. If you look at the frequencies, you get a pretty good distribution of people picking these across the 21 items, but you get the lowest frequency here on 2 and 4. So people are going to be more likely to pick the label categories, and then they'll pick this one that's kind of in between. It's probably, you know, if you're not too sure, you're more likely to pick a 3. You're not as likely to say 2 because it's kind of close to here, or 4 because it's close to there. This one gets picked a fair amount. So probably, all things together, probably the worst categories are these 2 and 4 in terms of not really providing a lot of information, but given so few people pick it, it doesn't affect the overall correlations you're going to see in a lot of data sets like this one. Okay, one second. I think we have a question. I just want to get back to here, and then I'll stop right there. For any questions? This is a shirt. Oh, we're selling it now.
It's the only shirt I wear anymore.
That's amazing.
You had a question.
I was just thinking that for the most part, these were administered verbally. Was the patient able to follow along on a printed copy? But in terms of what's labeled and what isn't, they were actually administered by the study nurse.
But were they looking over the shoulder? You don't know. In our cases,
yeah, that's where
that was scary.
There was a printed copy that they needed, but we don't have any information on it.
Yeah, but did they read the like categories to the people and say, you know?
They probably would have read.
They must have seen the labels for it to be behave like this. But that is another interesting thing. If you did a telephone interview, it could get quite different results.
Well, and then the subsequent ones, of course, are telephone.
Yeah.
So it's to see how the responses look.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how the interviewers actually do it, whether they do it right or not. And how do you even say that to people, though? I mean, because it's a mix there. You know, you say on a 0 to 5 scale where zero is this, and one is that, and five is that. That would probably be the most appropriate thing. And the others are not labeled. You know, you don't say that, but it's kind of like...
Yeah, I mean, we would have had in there a script for them to explain how to respond. And so we could go back and see how we scripted it for the interviewers We did an initial training to make sure that people were sort of kind of do it the same way, whether it was the nurses as well as the engineers, but it could have been deviation.
Yeah, but I mean, you tried to standardize, but it's just still, when you're trying to describe that, like normally, if you had the endpoints labeled, you could say, on a 0 to 5 scale, the 0 is this and 5 is that. That's perfectly clear. But now you got to say, and 1 is this. And you're going, well, what about the other points? And it's not you, it's the scale. You know? So, yes.
I wonder if it might be because when you look at the questionnaire, the big difference is between 0 and the non-zero part. And for this population, because they are all 30-day and linear after.
No,
this was pushed back to the higher score.
No, this was the baseline. They were all hospitalized for heart
failure. But the point is right though, right? In this at baseline, the most common response, I don't know if it's every time, but the most common response is the worst possible response.
Yeah, so that's why all the people, they don't make difference so much.
Right.
So most of them are at the higher score. That's why when you label them at a different level of the score, there might be not too much information loss when you combine those different scales.
Which is
the distribution.
To see the subsequent ones where they're at home.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so actually I should just apply the scoring, do the same thing, even on these little variables here, at the follow-up, just to see when they come back down, lower scores. Because that could partly explain it. Yeah, we don't know that this is just for this sample at that time point. And yeah, the effect could be bigger if you had a different distribution.
If for everyone, we can equally distribute it at 0, 1,
Yeah. Yeah. Now, one thing though, it was a pretty good distribution. So even though the most common response is the most negative, and you have 2 and 4 or not, really like 5 or 6% of the time those get selected, the rest of them are fairly common abused. Your suggestion is still true, but I did look to say, if you have a distribution where you have hardly anybody in a category, you can't evaluate. You need to have a minimum number. Now, there were plenty here, but that, in terms of the category response group, but then, like you said, on the scoring, the distribution shifts, it could matter, because we had so many 5 at baseline, that could kind of swamp the associations. So no matter what you do, it's not going to matter. So it's important to look, like you said, at it when it's a different distribution.
Yeah, I have another question. Is that based on all of these questions, you divided them into subscales, physical, emotional, and another subscale. And how did you, it's based on, I know you mentioned it's based on statistical model to divide the 21 items into. You use only 19 items of them based on these 3 different domains. So maybe that will also affect, because some of the items may not really belong to that domain.
Well, that's what I tried to do from the beginning. I mean, there has been this history, so I didn't want to take all 21 items, for example, and make the scale score, because there's such a hodgepodge there that I'm not sure what that thing is that's being measured. So there has been this history that said there's a physical and emotional scale. Some people have found social, but it hasn't been consistent. So I sort of knew that going in, but I said, with this data set, I want to make sure. So I started with those item scale correlations. Well, I started with exploratory factor analysis. So I tweaked it even. I could have taken just the standard physical and emotional, and that probably would have been fine. But I even tweaked it just a little and put a few different items in there so that I know those things, at least empirically, are going together at this point in time. Mm-hmm. So whatever it is they're measuring in common, which is consistent with physical and emotional health, empirically supported. So I don't think that would affect it. I mean, I think the way I did this here is the way you would need to do it. Because if you're going to use the category, you have to have a unidimensional concept. And I think those are supported. But in general, yeah, you have to be sure of that. And I am going to go back to the original scoring, too. Just I know it won't make any difference because there's so few items over two.
Okay, Victor, any questions about the food?
No. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, tell me about the food that you didn't know.